Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Sunday, December 22nd, 2019. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. I'm still in Las Vegas. He's back home healing in Connecticut. And what a Saturday that was in college basketball. Villanova upset Kansas. Colorado upset Dayton. St. John's upset Arizona in the Chris Mullin Invitational in San Francisco. I told you to honor Mike Anderson. From this day forward, Mike Anderson will forever be known as King of the Bay. Hashtag Golden Gate Mike. Norlander, did you see what Golden Gate Mike did to Arizona on Saturday?
I woke up to discover this, Parrish. I'm still mending. Feeling a little better today, I guess, than the past 2 days. I think I might be able to one day love again. But I did not get a chance to see. I watched the start of the game, but I was physically done. So I was like, I gotta call it and I'll see what goes down. But sure enough, damn, St. John's knocks off Arizona. Not even getting a return game, a one-time deal there. So if you want, listen, St. John's fans have obviously hit me up on this, and they wanted some more talk. I'm going to give them props real quick here because I thought St. John's would be the worst team in the Big East. Maybe it still will be, but right now, Johnny's fans riding way high. I mean, 11-2, credit to you. You get a nice road, quasi road, neutral court, whatever you want to call it, win against Arizona. What was it, a 3-point? It was something like 70-67, something like that. Got the win. What did you say, by the way? Hashtag Golden. What was it?
Golden Gate Mike.
Hashtag Golden.
Mike Anderson, King of the Bay. Hashtag Golden Gate Mike. Okay. He's Golden Gate Mike. He went out to San Francisco, won the Chris Mullin Invitational.
Johnny's fans, be optimistic. Enjoy this. You go 11-2 in your non-conference schedule. That's better than what anyone thought you were going to be in the first year under Mike Anderson. Only losses at home to Vermont by 2 and then against Arizona State. But overall, congrats on that. Arizona, we'll see. I still actually like them big picture, but not good to lose against St. John's on a neutral. So, yes, that was arguably, I guess, the biggest result of the weekend. Hashtag not really. But St. John's fans, I know you wanted even more analysis when we got to the mailbag from late last week. I promise you, if you guys continue to play well in a stacked Big East, and trust me, we're going to get to that later on this podcast, then we're going to get you. In fact, your first Big East game comes New Year's Eve against really maybe the best team in the league in Butler, and we're going to get to Butler. Don't you worry about it, for the first time this season on the podcast. But we'll wait and see. Congrats to St. John's fans, and of course St. John's and Golden Gate Mike. I guess that's now a thing. Good win on you.
Norlander, first off, I don't think you're authorized to be making promises to St. John's fans at the opening of a podcast. And nobody's worried about whether we're going to get to Butler. There's literally nobody listening right now who's like,
do not underestimate the Butler fan base.
We are going to get to Butler, I promise. But I had to start with Golden Gate Mike, King of the Bay, Mike Anderson going to San Francisco and beating Arizona. Again, the upsets, the big ones, Villanova upset Kansas, Colorado upset Dayton, St. John's upset Arizona. Ohio State, meantime, dealt Kentucky its second straight loss. North Carolina snapped its 4-game losing streak against UCLA. Auburn, San Diego State, Duquesne, and Liberty each remained undefeated. So we could take this any number of directions, but I want to start with the fact that there's going to be a new number one in the AP poll on Monday because Kansas became, as I'm sure you've heard, the fifth top-ranked team to lose so far this season. If you're keeping track, number one Michigan State lost to Kentucky. Number one Kentucky lost to Evansville. Number one Duke lost to Stephen F. Austin. Number one Louisville lost to Texas Tech. And now number one Kansas has lost to Villanova. We'll get to who should be the new number one in a minute, but I thought Bill Self nailed it Saturday. After losing to Villanova, the Hall of Fame coach from Kansas said he doesn't believe there are any dominant teams in college basketball. And he thinks it's because there aren't as many good players in college basketball as usual. Norlander, what do you make of that theory?
I 100% buy it. A couple places I want to take this. First of all, I don't know if this is completely related, but I was thinking about this a couple days ago. Parrish, we're just at about Christmas here. I cannot remember the last season of college basketball where we were 6, 7, 8 weeks deep into a season, and you looked around at the landscape and you thought, okay, who's, top three, top five, top seven guys you'd have for National Player of the Year. Usually by this point, when 90% plus of the non-conference slate has been played, you have some sort of assembly of it. The closest thing we can get to a statistical analysis of this is probably the KPOY, KenPom Player of the Year algorithm. Right now, here's 1 through 10. Louisville's Jordan Wara. 2 is Duke's Vernon Carey Jr. 3 is Ohio State's Caleb Wesson. 4 is Iowa's Luka Garza. 5 is Marcus Howard at Marquette. 6 is Oregon's Peyton Pritchard. 7 is Kansas's Devon Dotson. 8 is Dayton's Obi Toppin. 9 is Seton Hall's Miles Powell. Hope to get you back on the floor soon. And then 10 is Gonzaga's Filip Petrushev. So maybe a couple surprises in there. Like Luka Garza being 4 is certainly something that we wouldn't expect. But there has not been a combination of guys being awesome and their teams landing signature wins consistently and staying in the top 10, top 15 of the poll. So I think that's been a case. And I don't even know who my favorite would be. Do you have, if you have to log it right now, Parrish, would it be one of those 10? Would it be somebody else? Like, who is the player of the year to you right now in college basketball?
Well, first and foremost, I think you're right. Like, usually by this time, there is an obvious guy. Or at least there's three obvious guys.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, Zion has emerged by now. Adam Morrison has, and J.J. Redick have emerged by now.
Valentine, Buddy Hield, the year that they were both awesome by Christmas. It can sometimes be a two-horse race. I get what you're saying.
Right. And right now it's like, I mean, those are all nice players. But is if you had to name a National Player of the Year right now, you'd be like, I mean, you like with Zion, you'd go, it's clearly Zion Williamson. And if you had to do it right now, you'd be like, I guess it's Peyton Pritchard. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like it, right now, if I had to vote player of the year, I'd probably go Peyton Pritchard or Caleb Wesson. And and neither one of them just jump off the page. Although, like, Peyton has been terrific. He was terrific again on Saturday.
He has been good. I'd be Wesson, Pritchard. You know, had Dayton won yesterday, it might be Obi Toppin. And they lost in a heartbreaker. I'll touch on that later briefly. The other reason is this. Now, I wrote about this in the lead-up to the NBA draft in May. So what's happened here is as the NBA has, I don't want to say loosened its guidelines, but as the pre-draft process has expanded and as two-way contracts and the money tied to them has become more enticing as players have found less of a stigma to potentially starting their careers in either the G League or even chasing playing for a foreign team for a couple of years before maybe hopefully breaking into the NBA. That has led to larger pools of players leaving college basketball early in hopes that they can make as much money as possible. And whether or not that's a good decision, I don't even think we really have enough data just yet. We might need a couple more years to really find out if that's a good thing or a bad thing collectively on the behalf of the players. But what it has led to is an unprecedented era in college basketball. And it's not just talented freshmen leaving. The issue here is that you have sophomores to be, juniors to be, and seniors to be who are leaving college basketball en masse more than ever before. Here are the number of underclassmen who remained in the pool to be selected in the 2019 draft after the NCAA and NBA deadlines came and went. In 2016, it was 59 guys. In 2017, it was 64 guys. In 2018, a significant jump, more than 20%. It went up to 79 guys. And then this season, 86 players who were not seniors, who were eligible to return to college if they so chose not to, pursued pro opportunities. And so even if you take, you know, 4 of those guys, 8 of those guys, 12 of those guys, fringe prospects, whatever, that could have been top 3, top 5, top 10 guys in the league, depending on the league they're not in college basketball anymore. And so that's why I think collectively the talent has dipped and why we're seeing a little bit of what we're seeing this year. Those are my answers as to why college basketball is the way it is right now.
I think that what you just touched on is certainly one of them. Let me circle back to and when Bill Self said this, it's nothing that lots of people haven't said. Jay Wright literally said the same thing after the same game. There's no dominant team in college basketball. We've touched on this before, but just to update it, right now Ohio State's got the highest adjusted efficiency margin in the country. It's plus 27.69. That would only be tied for 7th last season. And if it ends up being the highest adjusted efficiency margin at the end of the season, 27.69. It would be the lowest best final adjusted efficiency margin of the KenPom era. So again, what does that mean in like real words? It means that the best teams in the country this season are not as good as the best teams we watch in most seasons. Beyond that, or if we're trying to figure out, okay, so what caused that? What created that? I think there's three things. One of them is what you touched on. Lots of borderline prospect left good teams early only to go undrafted. Like, let's look at only – forget second-round picks, guys who are in G League. I'm just saying guys who went undrafted after leaving college with eligibility remaining. Like, Tyler Cook could be at Iowa right now.
Mm-hmm.
How good would they be? This is the one. What if Jared Harper was at Auburn right now? Like, Auburn's undefeated.
Yeah.
Top 15 in the country. And they could theoretically have Jared Harper, who went undrafted. Zach Norvell could be at Gonzaga right now. Shamori Pons could be at St. John's right now. Naz Reid could be at LSU right now. All players who left school early and went undrafted. So that's some of it. There's more and better professional opportunities for borderline NBA prospects than ever before. And these players are chasing it and hopefully at least taking advantage of it. So that's one thing. The other obvious thing is that some of the best class of 2019 prospects either didn't enroll in college or have already quit their college team or they're hurt.
Yeah.
That's LaMelo Ball, RJ Hampton, James Wiseman, Cole Anthony. That's four top 10 picks. Three of them aren't in school anymore, and the others hurt and might not return to college basketball. So that's another factor. And then I think this is a factor as well. Some of the best talent in the class of 2019 didn't go to traditional blue blood schools. Like, what if James Wiseman went to Kentucky instead of Memphis? He might still be playing right now.
And Kentucky might be the best team in the sport, honestly. If he was playing, that could definitely be the case.
Right. You take those guards, you can give it, like, that's besides the fact that Kentucky can't shoot or isn't making shots, the bigs are just like, whatever, for the most part. And you throw James Wise, like, he's picking between Memphis and Kentucky. What if he picked Kentucky? Then Kentucky might look like a dominant team. What if Anthony Edwards went to Kentucky instead of Georgia?
Hmm.
What if Isaiah Stewart went to Duke or Michigan State instead of Washington? And I'm not just throwing out random schools. Wiseman considered Kentucky. Anthony Edwards picked Georgia over Kentucky. Isaiah Stewart was down to Duke, Michigan State, Washington. What if Scotty Lewis went to Kentucky instead of Florida? So I think those
What if all these dudes just went to Kentucky? it'd be compelling as hell. That's
the way it used to be.
I agree. And if that actually had happened, we would have a great team yet again in college basketball. I'm sure UK fans, in light of what's happened here in the past two games, are loving this discussion and being like, "Thanks for reminding us, Parrish." But you're right. If that had happened, we could be discussing other things for sure.
Yeah, like James Wiseman, Anthony Edwards, and Scotty Lewis, at the very least, were like down to the schools they picked and Kentucky, and they all picked the other schools, not Kentucky. Here's a question for you. Think about this. What if every player went to Kentucky? How good would they be?
Well, that's not allowed, but yeah, sure. If they just decide, I'm just going to go. I don't even care about my college eligibility anymore. There's no room on the roster. I'm just going to attend the University of Kentucky.
I don't think there's a limit on walk-ons. What if Cal gave out 13 scholarships to the 13 best players, and then literally every other player in America just enrolled in college at Kentucky, decided to be a walk-on, pay their own way, and Kentucky had like a 500-man roster with all of the best players? How good would it be?
And 100 different platoons. It'd be the ultimate platoon system. It'd be incredible.
I don't know why. Like, John Calipari thinks he's a big thinker. He's always talking about these big ideas.
He ain't thought about that. Nope.
I don't know why he's thought about that. In all seriousness, that's what it is. It's that some of the best prospects who could theoretically be in college right now aren't in college right now, or they're hurt. Some of the best talent did not go to traditional blue bloods. They kind of split up a little bit, went to schools that they don't usually go to, like Georgia, Memphis, Washington. And then we lost really good players from really good teams who had eligibility remaining and didn't even get drafted in the 2019 draft. I think that's what's created this season we're watching right now.
Yeah, I think all of these factors have played a part. But, all right, so do we think that this will be – let's just extend it out a little bit further here. Like, do we think that this is – the start of a new era for college basketball. And, you know, for the next X number of years, this is just what it's going to be. Like, you know, are we going to have this much tumult in the rankings, this much of a lack of dominance there? I asked that to you. I'll offer up my answer even before you answer it here. I don't. I find this to be an aberrational kind of season. Even if we get to the NBA bringing its age limit down to 18, which everyone says is going to happen, but it's still not for sure. It's not 100%. But if and when that happens, obviously we are going to miss out on top tier talent. I don't know. I find this to be an intriguing year because of how ridiculous it's been and how chaotic it's been. But I don't feel like come 2030, when you and I are on our 2,942nd podcast together.
Hey, wait, what are the odds you feel better doing this podcast in 2030 than you do right now?
That's too dark a future. I do not want to look down. I do not want to look down that right now. I'm ready to do a podcast from an Epsom salt bath, by the way. I'm ready just to podcast in the bath with you right now.
With 260, like, is there even a podcast between 260-year-olds? Like, are we going to?
Of course there is. I'm sure there's a podcast between 280-year-olds.
Is
it? Do you realize how many podcasts are out there?
I mean, I guess I do.
It's more podcasts than a beach has sand, man. Everyone's got a podcast, but
I'm assuming we're going to age out of this thing at some point.
Maybe, but when we're getting to 2030 and we're working on this, this thing here, and who knows how we'll be communicating to each other by then. Our wives have left us at that point because we talk to each other more than them and all that. I don't think we'll look back on the 2019-2020 season and say, yeah, you know what, that was the start of it. You know, that was the start of college basketball's depression into this era that it's in now. I happen to think that this is something of a standalone season. Do you disagree?
No, I don't disagree. I don't think seasons will be typically as chaotic as the season we're watching right now. I do believe this. More and more elite prospects are going to skip college, either because they are allowed to go straight to the NBA draft or because they just decide to pursue other opportunities, or they decide just to sit out. I mean, we've got examples of that throughout the sport in recent years. Darius Bazley just said, you know what, I'm going to sit out. RJ Hampton's like, yo, I'm going to another continent. James Wiseman, again, just quit a top 10 team while healthy in the middle of the season. I know there's unique circumstances there, but still, like, that's what he did. He quit his team in the middle of a season that looked promising. I do think all of that could lead to more of that type of stuff. And I do believe that players are going to leave school more often than they used to early, even if they're not projected to be in the NBA, because they'll just take advantage of some of these other opportunities that now exist. Like we've talked about on previous podcasts, it used to be people would say, if you're not a first round pick, you need to go back to school. And then it was like, you know what? If you're a second round pick, you're probably getting a guaranteed contract in some form. So like, if you're going to get picked and you want to go. And now it's like, okay, you might not get picked, but even if you don't get picked, you could still maybe get a two-way. So I think the pool of players that are, I talked to coaches about this before. And this is what they'll tell you, or this is what I told them, and they agreed. It used to be if you had a top 30 pick on your team, you should prepare to lose it. Then it became, if you've got a pick on your team, first round, second round, you should prepare to lose it. And now it's like, if you've got a top 80 or 90 player on your team, you should probably think about the idea that you might really lose him. That has changed, I believe, you know, over the past decade. And I don't know that it'll get worse, but I don't see it. I don't see it flipping around and going the other direction.
Maybe not. Maybe not flipping, but I do think that because we've seen, hey Parrish, remember we were like, we think we can do this podcast in 40 minutes before we started recording. No, that's not going to happen. We're at 20 minutes. We got plenty to touch on, so I'll be quick with this. Because we've now seen this weird quasi about face with Mark Emmert, who's like, we need congressional oversight on name, image, and likeness. And like, his tune hasn't changed, but he's singing in a little bit of a different key here, is Mark Emmert. I think that we'll get enough NIL stuff on the table that still, Because I think, you know, existentially, when we're talking about college basketball and what it can be and how it can entice players and be the best product possible in obviously a very competitive marketplace, the NIL and its rights to players is not insignificant. In fact, it might wind up being one of the more significant things. And so I think by 2022, 2023, we could have a system in place that it might just be enough to keep some of those guys that were on the fringes to return. And I also think that Wiseman is a unique situation that won't be duplicated. LaMelo Ball is a unique situation that won't be duplicated. Two of the top three projected picks in the draft, we're not going to have, even if there is a dad out there of a pair of brothers or three brothers, and they're all 8, 10, and 12 right now, that's just not going to happen again. So I do think that those circumstances are specific to this season. I know what RJ Hampton did. I still think that there's a strong possibility we'll get another RJ Hampton come next April, May, June, but I'm more inclined to believe that, you know, the tide will rise again with college basketball in the next year, two or three.
I hope you're right. Let's move on. So I was inside T-Mobile Arena on Saturday for Ohio State's 71-65 victory over Kentucky. We're going to get into that next, but first, check this out.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
So the CBS Sports Classic was Saturday here in Las Vegas. Kentucky shot poorly from three again, and Ohio State won despite Caleb Wesson fouling out with 3:30 remaining. Again, final score, Ohio State 71, Kentucky 65. I wrote about the game, so folks who read probably know what I thought. So let's start with you, Norlander. What's your main takeaway from Ohio State's win over Kentucky on America's most watched network, the Network of Stars?
Main takeaway, Kentucky is not as bad as the general public and maybe its fan base might fear. I thought it actually played a relatively good game. It does have issues, obviously, with its shooting, but Ohio State, I actually thought Kentucky played here's the deal. I thought Kentucky, you know, soup to nuts, played a better game relative to what it's played the entire season. Like, for what Kentucky's been, I thought Kentucky played like a B-plus game. For what Ohio State's been, I thought Ohio State played like a B-minus game. And it's a statement on both of those teams this season that even though that was the case, Ohio State still won and covered the spread. Shouts to me. I don't know how well I did on the picks, but I think I beat you.
I do know, by the way. Do you want to
yeah,
know?
Yeah, I didn't check. What is it?
You went 4-1, and I went 1-4.
There we go. All right. Okay. So I did know that
I'll go ahead and give you the updated tally. You are now 19-15-1, and I am 13-21-1.
It's not over. It's a long season ahead. What was the one that I missed then? What was the game I missed and you got right?
You picked against your Butler Bulldogs.
I did. Ugh, how dare I? What's the matter with me? So but anyway, just to tie a little knot on my thought there, that was my overall thought. I thought, you know what, Ohio State could be up by like 15 here, and it just a couple reasons why. I know it was a little bit of a skittish whistle, and then Wesson fouls out when he shouldn't have even gotten that fourth foul to begin with, but whatever. But I still, like, I think I generally still like Kentucky. Nate Sestina playing the way he did, stepping out, shooting threes. They need him. Like, that was another thing. It's like they need him to be that guy if they're going to win the SEC.
They don't only need him. They need him to be that, like a pick-and-pop stretch forward. If they can't get perimeter shooting from their guards, they got to get it from somewhere. And he shot 40% last season at Ray Bucknell.
Yeah.
I think John tapped into something yesterday, and I believe it's why he was in pretty good spirits even after going 0-2 in Las Vegas. I know he didn't want to lose either of those games, especially the one earlier in the week. But I think he watched his team go toe-to-toe for roughly 40 minutes with one of, if not the best team in the country, and he figured out where he can get shooting from, and it might be from his grad transfer from Bucknell.
He was huge, and he's back after missing a couple games due to injury. And if Hagans can play close to what he was yesterday, I thought he had his moments. I still need a little bit more out of Maxey. Quickly had a couple of bright spots, because ultimately, you know, Nick Richards, EJ Montgomery, Khalil Whitney, just Keon Brooks, they're not – I don't know if any of those guys are going to become – I don't know if any of those four guys will have a game this season where Kentucky fans at the end of it go, we won the game because of the way that Nick Richards played for 31 minutes, or we won the game because of the way that EJ Montgomery played for 26 minutes. Same with Whitney, who is going to probably be one and done regardless, but Whitney's just a total jag on this team. He is. Why is that funny? It's nothing against him. He's going to be a millionaire in 7 months, but he has not been an impact guy on Kentucky whatsoever, and I'm not even seeing, like, first-round stuff so far. So I'm just saying, like, to me, Hagan's been fun.
I would argue this is the worst group of bigs Cal's had since he's been to Kentucky.
It's hard to argue against that. And so how about this? Okay, let me just lob this back at you. I'm still in on Kentucky, relatively speaking. And by in, I would say I've seen this show before to a certain extent. They still wind up getting good seeds. They have a presence in March. I think they're going to be a top two team in the SEC. I think that's going to be the case. But how is that going to be the case if what you said is true and we are headed that way? If the front line here of Richards, Montgomery, if you want to include, you got to be fair, include Sestina in there, but he's not asked to do the kind of things that Richards, Montgomery, Brooks, Whitney's obviously a tweener. I wouldn't put him on the front line. But if that's true, and something you got to here, and you can expand on this, if that's the case and they're just this horrendous from three-point range, then how could Kentucky possibly be what we think it should be? If you're that bad from the perimeter on offense and you don't have reliability in your front court, then, you know, and you're 8-3 and you have one good win, then maybe we are still just kind of psyching ourselves up and giving credit to past teams, and we'll get to early March and say, no, this was actually the evidence was in by December. We just didn't want to believe it. I will still go contrary to what I'm just stated here, but Parrish, you know, are you more likely to sell on Kentucky at this point, given what we've presented here in the past 3-4 minutes?
I'm not selling. I would buy them at this price, the price that people are starting to wonder if they'll even make the NCAA tournament. I actually don't know if people are wondering that. I shouldn't just say that. But listen, they are not in the top 25 and one anymore. I don't know whether they'll be in the AP poll, but they shouldn't be in the AP poll. And so, like, given that I could buy them at an unranked price, I would buy them, not sell them here. They're still top 20 in defensive efficiency. They still got maybe not typical great Kentucky talent, but they still got more talent than most. And I think Sestina is going to fix some of the shooting problems. I think Ashton Hagans is a better shooter. I mean, not Ashton Hagans. I think Tyrese Maxey is a better shooter than he's shown. And I just think they're going to shoot better, if only because, my God, you can't shoot worse. So I'm still a believer in Kentucky, maybe not as a real national championship contender or a team likely to get back to number one in the rankings, but I still think it's a team that can compete for the SEC title and, you know, play in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, if not further. I'm not ruling any of that out.
All right, let me ask you this. So our last season when we were both, it's just hard to imagine. It was a year ago. I was at the CBS Sports Classic and able to walk, sit, and be ambulatory like a normal human being. And we watched Kentucky beat North Carolina. Remember last season?
Did I go last season?
Yes, you went. What are you talking about, my man? Yes, you were there. You were there. What are you talking about?
I have no recollection of being there last season.
We got Malnati's after the game that night. Remember, went to the pizza spot?
I vaguely remember that.
Come on, dude. This is a year ago.
You're 76. I don't remember entire trips to Las Vegas.
No, it was Chicago. We were in Chicago, not Las Vegas.
Oh, it was in Chicago.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Come on, let's pull the thread. Pull the thread. You went right to the United Center. You met me there. Anything? We got pizza that night. Wow.
I don't know.
Not a good moment for you here. Anyway, Kentucky had lost to Duke. Remember, got blown out. Lost to Seton Hall in overtime. Didn't have a good win. We had a lot of discussions similar to that as we are right now. And what kind of changed our minds was not that it defeated North Carolina in the Champions Classic, because it did, but the score was 80-72. But Keldon Johnson played well. Ashton Hagans had 8 steals. You know, you had Reed Travis, who had a relatively strong game. And after that, we talked about, okay, if this is what Kentucky can be. Like, we saw body to body, physically, what Kentucky's capable of. And lo and behold, Kentucky goes on to get a 2 seed. It won 27 games heading into the NCAA tournament. So that's a long setup just to say, since you were there and I was not, when you watched the game yesterday, whereas a year ago, we looked at Kentucky going up against Carolina and said, okay, we see what they have here and what they're capable of. This is why you should not bail on Kentucky. Physically, you know, when it was playing against an Ohio State team that's indisputably better at this point, did Kentucky look like a team that can do the kind of stuff that it wound up doing a season ago?
I think they can. I mean, I didn't watch Kentucky yesterday and go like, "Whoa, boy, this team's great." Like, they can't. They didn't make shots, and they haven't made shots all season. I will say, I talked to Dave Odom earlier in the week, the former Wake Forest coach. He's involved with this event, and he had sat in on a Kentucky practice, and he was like, "I'm telling you, they can shoot. They're just not making shots. I watched them practice. They have shooters." And then John has said the same thing on back-to-back days to me. Like, "We have shooters. We're just not making shots." And I'm going to trust that that's true to some degree. I don't think it's going to result in Kentucky being one of the best shooters in the shooting teams in the country, or being able to rely on beating people from the perimeter. But I do think they're going to get better. I would bet a significant amount of money that they don't end this season shooting 27.8% from three. But they are shooting 27.8% from three right now, which ranks 323rd nationally. And I looked this up last night, I guess, when I was writing the column. There hasn't been a team in the past 9 seasons make the NCAA tournament while shooting below 28% from three. Not one in the past 9 years. Now, Duke shot 30.8% from three last season, and which ranked 327th in the country, and they were the number one overall seed. So, right. You know, you don't have to go too far to find an example of you can be great shooting this poorly. But I did think it was interesting. No team shooting as poorly as Kentucky is shooting right now has made the NCAA tournament in the past 9 years. I still think if they shot it this poorly, they would be the exception to the rule. They'd make it one way or another. I don't think they're going to shoot it this poorly, but those are interesting numbers. Back to your question. I didn't watch Kentucky yesterday and go, "Oh boy, this is a monster. Like, get ready." But I did watch them play Ohio State basket for basket for much of the game. And I do think the demise of Kentucky has probably been overstated. And then I will just fall back on what I always fall back on, which is, except for the year Nerlens Noel tore his ACL, Cal has figured it out. Like, maybe all those teams haven't been developed into national championship contenders, but they've all developed into quality basketball teams. And I'd be shocked if this team doesn't also develop into a quality basketball team. And I bet we'll start seeing it, you know, probably middle of January, you know, start of February.
Okay. Ohio State wins, and you put them back at number one in your top 25-1. To me, it's not crazy. It's not. To me, Gonzaga should be the number one team in the country, and not because it's now like, yeah, like the scoreboard at Wrigley Field. Like, you take out Kansas, you insert the next thing. Like, and Gonzaga bumps up to one. To me, Gonzaga should be the number one, and it will be the number one team in the AP Top 25. That's just a function of how the voters work. The loss is by more points on a neutral. They each have one loss. You can get into the specifics if you want, but I don't think the loss is so drastic that it should leapfrog Ohio State. Gonzaga also has three road wins. It has, what, five combined road neutrals. And to me, this would be my clinch card for Gonzaga right now. It has been this good. It depends on how you want to evaluate them. Like, it's been this good despite the fact that it's had at least three guys dealing with significant health issues almost the entire season so far, and it's still been awesome. So you can evaluate them as saying, like, imagine how good they'd be if they were at full health, or even despite not being at full health, they're still this good. Regardless, you saw Ohio State win in person. Chris Holtmann bribed you, and now Ohio State's number one. Or maybe Mark Titus did, by the way. I think Titus might have been out there. Damn you.
I did see Mark Titus.
Yeah, Titus, damn you. Titus, are you just trying to appease Mark Titus? Explain yourself.
I saw Titus. I saw Tate. I talked to Chris Holtmann. Nobody actually tried to bribe me. I just think simply, and listen, reasonable minds can disagree on this. There are some things that I don't think reasonable people can disagree on. But on this, should it be Ohio State or Gonzaga, reasonable people can disagree on it. I simply think Ohio State's got the best body of work. They're 11-1, four top 40 KenPom wins. Gonzaga's got three top 40 KenPom wins. But yes, I know before somebody screams it, if you take it up top 50, then they both got four. But what you frame it however you want to frame it. If you frame it that way, Ohio State's got four top 40s. Gonzaga's got three. They are the only zero-loss team or one-loss team in the country with four top 40 KenPom wins. Those wins are over Villanova, Kentucky, Penn State, and North Carolina. And then this matters. They won those games by an average of 22 points. They won three of them by at least 25. And they are also number one at KenPom. And the loss obviously came at last Sunday night at Minnesota. We'll never forget it. But their second best scorer did not play. So their loss is a shorthanded loss. Whereas Gonzaga's loss, I mean, I went and double-checked just to make sure everybody who matters played. And yeah. So when you throw all that into a pot, I just decided I think Ohio State's got the best body of work. But if the AP poll has Gonzaga number one on Monday, I'm not going to go through, find everybody who voted for Gonzaga and write 700 words about how dumb they are. There's nothing dumb with Gonzaga being number one.
Yeah, and the margins are slim, by the way. I mean, Ohio State is number one in America in average scoring margin, 21.8. Number three is Gonzaga at 20.1. Number two is actually the team that I would probably put third. San Diego State's 12-0. Its scoring margin is 20.8 so far this season, so that's 1-2-3. And San Diego State has won three road games, three neutrals, beaten BYU, Creighton, Iowa, just destroyed the Utah team that beat Kentucky. So the Aztecs have been extremely good, only have one more non-con game, and have been kind of zipping under the radar as well. They're, you know, outside of San Diego State fans, I don't think there's hardly any faction that's saying San Diego. Actually, you know what? I think I saw Gottlieb say San Diego State should be number one. But the resume is actually fairly strong. And I checked the net rankings before we started podcasting. It had not updated for today. San Diego State was number one in the net earlier this week, and then it flipped Friday, I believe. But to me, right now, after what we saw over the weekend as we talk about who should be one, I would go Gonzaga, Ohio State, San Diego State, and then I think there's actually a fairly, and to be clear, I have not looked at your top 25 and one, so I don't know where you have SDSU, but right now, if you kind of took all of it in, I think I go those three, get Butler in there somewhere, Duke in there somewhere, I guess, but I don't know. To me, those three right now in the moment seem separate from the rest, considering resume, what they've done away from their home venues, and SDSU not having a loss yet, I don't think is insignificant.
I did vote. I did jump San Diego State up to number 14. Obviously, 12-0 and smashing people. Like, there's no way to get around that, but you know, it's not like they've got this big signature win. They've got a bunch of good wins,
right,
but they don't have a big one. And they are only 19th at KenPom, for whatever that's worth. But let me be clear. I don't think I wouldn't put San Diego State number one right now. But if somebody votes San Diego State number one on the AP poll on Monday, that's not where I'll choose to focus the Politex column. I think you can reasonably defend. You can reasonably defend having the Aztecs at number one. I got a trivia time for you.
Okay.
Trivia time. So I mentioned, right now, Ohio State has four top 40 KenPom wins.
Yeah.
I think there's only one other team in the country that has four. Who is it?
Butler's my first guess.
Butler is an incorrect answer unless I didn't check them correctly.
Okay, check them out.
So let's double check. Butler has two.
Okay.
Top four.
My next guess is, and this probably isn't it, my next guess is Duke, because when the net rankings debuted, Duke was the only team in America with four quad one wins in the first version of the net rankings. Is Duke the correct answer?
Duke is not the correct answer. Duke has three. Duke has Kansas, Michigan State, and then Georgetown, which is ranked 39th right now.
All right, give me one more guess here. My last guess, I want two guesses, I lied. My next guess is Baylor, because they've been sneaky good here. Our Scott Drew's Baylor Bears, the correct answer.
Baylor is not the correct answer. Jeez. Baylor has three. Those three wins are over Butler, Arizona, and Villanova.
And then my last guess is, even with the loss on Saturday, and that was like a weird game, but worth watching, Kansas-Villanova, the reverse bang from Jay Wright. Actually, the camera caught him afterwards saying it's no good or something on the on Dotson's layup attempt. I got to get a camera on Jay Wright's face no matter what if it's a one-possession game to end it. I believe that the net ranking has the Kansas Jayhawks with a top three non-conference strength of schedule. So based on that number, not KenPom, but that number, I'll say that Kansas has four top 40 KenPom wins. Am I right? Is that the answer?
That is not the answer. Had they beaten Villanova, had Devon Dotson made a free throw or made a runner at the buzzer, they would have four, but they have three right now. The three are over Dayton, BYU, and Colorado. The correct answer is the Oregon Ducks.
Oh. Okay.
They've got four top 40 wins. They've beaten number 13 Michigan, number 22 Seton Hall, number 30 Memphis, number 34 Houston. So that makes Ohio State, like I said, the only zero loss or one loss team with four top 40 KenPom wins, because Oregon, of course, has two losses, those losses that it took in the battle for Atlantis. Quick story. So I'm talking to Adam Jardy, who covers Ohio State for the Columbus Dispatch.
I think you're going to tell me what I already know, but go ahead.
He said in a press conference.
Oh, I have the audio. I have the audio.
You have the audio?
Yeah, I have the audio, but it's not. It's too low to play. I was going to surprise you on a podcast like three podcasts ago, but unfortunately, the audio is too low. Like, I can't even jack the audio from it. It would be just, it's a too drastic between what our volumes are as we talk to each other right now. I'll send it to you. Yeah, I have it. Yeah, go ahead and tell the listeners what Adam did, because it's tremendous.
In a press conference at Ohio State, and I wasn't clear if Adam asked or if somebody else
asked. No, he asked. Yeah, he asked.
It was Adam? Okay.
And then someone tried to clarify Adam's question, and Adam's like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, the question was, did you hear what Gary Parrish said about your style of play? And then goes on to eventually tell Chris Holtman that I said on the Island College Basketball Podcast that I'm sexually attracted to Ohio State's style of play, which is an all-time, like, just a, that's when I need to remember, like, people listen to this because I'm just having a good time most of the time, goofing around about being sexually attracted to Ohio State's style of play. And next thing you know, Chris Holtman's having to answer questions about why I'm sexually attracted to his style of play.
I knew that he had been asked about this. And I intentionally did not give you the heads up on that because I was wondering, and it obviously didn't. I was wondering if he was going to address it with you before you started rolling on HQ, when you had to interview him for HQ. But mega shouts to mega Oasis fan Adam Jardy for asking that question. And there's some other reporter that tries to like clarify the question in different terms, and then Adam's like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. No, the thing that I don't know if I can repeat it for public consumption here, but Gary Parrish was extremely complimentary in your style of play, Chris, and then he asked if Chris had heard it, and Holtman said something to the effect of, like, I did not. Obviously, Gary Parrish does a good job promoting the sport. Love his coverage of the game like so many of you, but I did not. But, yes, that is – so if there's any other teams that you're – listen, here's what we need to do. We need to find a list of the teams whose style of play on either end of the floor, you find yourself sexually – like really on a carnal level, you find it irresistible. We'll get that list out. we can have the beat writers for each of those teams then go to their, you know, weekly, you know, meet, press conference with the coaches and get their responses. And then we can kind of compile them and make it into a kind of a special segment at some point on the season on the podcast. I think that's the next step here.
I'm obviously not going to object if somebody wants to start asking random coaches across America what they think about me being sexually attracted to their
Okay, just before, you know, I need to know your level of horniness over Maryland's style of play.
Not limp.
Oh my God! All right, moving on.
Anthony Cowan doesn't do it for me. What do you want me to say? What do you want me to say?
It's been a sexual.
You're trying to get me to pleasure myself to Anthony Cowan, and I can't do that. I can't do that. That's not something I can do.
Maryland beat writers, you're off the hook. Beat writers, okay.
Maybe it's time to move on.
Yeah. Want to talk about Holtman's old team?
Not yet.
Okay.
I want to talk about my Dayton Flyers. By the way, it's before yesterday. It is possible. Had you asked me the same question you asked me about Maryland about Dayton, I'd have had a drastically different answer. But then they went and lost on a buzzer beater in Chicago to Colorado, and it was a true buzzer beater. Shot off, buzzer sounds, ball goes through. Deshaun Swartz buried it. He's a 46% three-point shooter. I guess if you can get a wide-open three for a 46% three-point shooter for the win, you got to do that, right?
Awesome game here. Now, I know you didn't get to see it because, you were obviously in Vegas. This was on CBS Sports Network and was not just the best game of the day. I watched most of this game from about the 12-minute mark of the first half on. Dayton's been involved in two of probably the four or five most entertaining games I've seen the entire season. Loving the Flyers here. They obviously had the great game in overtime in the Maui Championship against Kansas and now against Colorado. So if you're a Dayton fan, it's great to see that your team's capable of such fun levels of drama. But unfortunately, both those games ended in losses. They're the only two losses for the Flyers this season. Obi Toppin, by the way, had an absurd. Did you see the putback that he had where he missed it? Oh my gosh. He's like posting up this dude. It might have been Tyler Bay. I can't remember who he was posting up. And just pounding it. Goes for a little hook. Misses it. Gets his own rebound. And just one hand slams it back. I'll text you it after this is done. It is one of the five or six best plays of this. Obi Toppin, responsible for two of the five or six best plays of the season because he also had the turnaround, made three-pointer, stare down the Kansas bench in the first half of that game back in Maui. Obi Toppin, I cannot get enough. Based on these two plays alone, I think I'd vote him for National Player of the Year at this point. But Dayton did lose, which was a bit of a stinger here. Kansas and Colorado are two of the three best teams Dayton's played so far this season. The other one was St. Mary's. So if you're Dayton, a big opportunity lost. But just a quick note here on Colorado, because the Buffs are potentially going to have their best season in 10, 15, 20 years. We'll see where it can go. This was a significant win for Colorado's non-conference resume. The only game left now is against Iona on December 29th, which Colorado should obviously win. Colorado has two players on its roster that I think are going to be on NBA rosters a year from now. Tyler Bay has been terrific, and then McKinley Wright IV is unquestionably, in my mind, a top 10 point guard in America. Now, he hasn't been shooting it well enough this year, so we'll see where that goes. I think kind of Wright's consistency or lack thereof is going to determine what Colorado can and can't do. But, you know, Colorado, it's stuck in a weird time zone. Norlander, fast fact, I was born in Denver. There we go. You didn't know that, did you, Parrish?
I did not know that.
Born in Denver.
I never thought about it for a second.
Never even a little bit. But at 10-2, Tad Boyle looking to have a team that is capable of making a Sweet 16, obviously a team getting back to the tournament for the first time in five seasons. Tad Boyle's been there since 2010, 2011. This is probably going to be his best team that he's ever had. So credit to them. Credit for Colorado for just a very entertaining, clutch kind of win. Really strong defensive team. If it can kind of get its act together on offense, Colorado can be a top three team in the Pac-12. Give the Buffs a little bit of a buzz here for getting a nice win on a neutral court in Chicago. By the way, there are a couple more quickies on this. One, It was like the Chicago Legends or something like that. Like, I think there were like two or three games played at the United Center, and I don't know why that happened. Again, I don't understand why these things are scheduled the way they are, but whatever.
Money is always answered.
For sure. And then you wouldn't have seen this, but I'm going to give John Rothstein a shout because John Rothstein did a sideline hit, but it was with like 6 minutes to go in this game, and you saw like the leather strap of his bag on his shoulder, and so it looked kind of weird. And what was happening, I'd never seen this before. Rothstein does the hit, and then he starts talking about DePaul, and if DePaul had a different name on its jersey, it'd be getting more respect as a top 25 team. And
also if DePaul had a different name on his jersey, it'd be weird. Most teams have their own names on their jerseys, so think about that. Just keep that in mind.
I can't deny that. Well, DePaul was hosting Northwestern also on Saturday night. So Rothstein does the hit, and then the CBS camera follows him as he leaves the venue that game early to go catch Northwestern at DePaul the same night in Chicago. It was I mean, I'm guessing he was covering that as well, but I had never seen that before.
No, he was doing both games. I was originally supposed to do both games.
That's what so you're why. You're the reason why.
I think I don't know that it would have been turned into quite the production if it would have been me instead of Rothstein.
But both games were on CBS Sports Network, so that's exactly why it happened. It was the reverse of, like, you know how when the games start with NBA, like the pregame, you got the guys with their headphones on, their outfits, and they're walking into the arena. It was that, except it was John Rothstein with his traveling bag in his long winter coat exiting the arena to get to Paul Northwestern.
I initially had that assignment, and then but I had already booked all of the travel for the CBS Sports Classic in Las Vegas. And so then I was like, you guys just tell me what you want me to do. And then it was like, okay, you go to Vegas, Rothstein, go to Chicago, and everything's covered. So I haven't seen it. Obviously, I was in T-Mobile Arena, but I'm sure it was great, and Rothstein is genuinely the best. Just a good dude who works hard. And if that came through on the broadcast.
It did.
I'm glad it did. Real quick on Dayton, I'm still a believer in them. You know, I had Dayton into the top five, the top 25 and one, and every day somebody would tell me they ain't beat nobody. So I was not that I'm rooting against Colorado, but I'm rooting for Dayton because I hate all those people. So I was disappointed to see the result. But I'm still a believer in that team. That's a top five offensive efficiency team, number one effective field goal percentage in the country, number one two-point percentage in the country, and Obi Toppin is awesome. I still think that's the best team in the Atlantic 10. I think he's the best player in the Atlantic 10, one of the best players in the country. And I think that's still a team that can compete for a Final Four, even if what happened in Chicago was less than ideal. Now let's talk about Chris Holtmann's former team. I saw on Twitter, you just went ahead and gave Butler a number one seed in the NCAA tournament yesterday. So consider this your opportunity to love the Bulldogs.
It is going to be my opportunity to love the Bulldogs. It doesn't, obviously, but just for, like, you know, Paul. All right, so Jerry Palm had his bracketology update on either Thursday night or Friday morning. And if Palm, he's not going to, we're in the midst of some bowl season, but if Palm updated his bracketology again for Sunday or for Monday, his previous number ones were Kansas, Ohio State, Gonzaga, and Baylor. And now I think you would have to have Butler as a one seed. So you'd have Ohio State, Butler, Baylor, still Baylor and Gonzaga. Those would be the one seeds right now. Two's probably Louisville, Duke, Auburn. I think I would go San Diego State, and given where they are in the net rankings, that San Diego State would be a two seed right now. So just some credit here to Butler, 11-1, the only loss to another projected one seed at Baylor by 1 point, has won one road game and three others away from home. Doesn't have like a massive signature win, although a little bit bumpy late against Purdue. It like clearly dominated Purdue, which before the game Purdue was 7. And Butler was 8 in KenPom, and after that, Butler went to 7. Purdue, despite being 7-5, is 11th in KenPom right now. And it's not just KenPom. Torvik has Purdue at 11 as well. The preseason influence on those rankings is kind of remarkable. I mean, Purdue is ranked ahead of teams like one loss Virginia and one loss Wichita State, two loss Penn State, undefeated Auburn in many instances. It's Purdue's kind of a funky deal overall. But credit to Butler for an outstanding start, one of its best starts in school history in non-conference play. Laval Jordan and his staff are doing a great job. This is his third season with Butler. Made the tournament year one. Last season, way down to the point where it's sub-500, and Butler was not projected by anyone, really, outside of Indianapolis as NCAA tournament quality. That hasn't been the case. Kamar Baldwin's been very good. Bryce Golden has been an emerging player down low. And it's been nice to see. Sean McDermott continues to be a sniper. In fact, I forget what game it was. It might have been Florida. It might have been Baylor. But McDermott went out with a really ugly-looking injury earlier in the season, to the point where, when he left the game, again, this is the fifth instance we've seen of this, but when it happened, you thought, oh, great. Sean McDermott, he's going to be out for who knows how many games. He came back in the very same game, has been outstanding. Top 15 on offense and defense in terms of efficiency are your Butler Bulldogs. Credit to them. Have a claim as the best team in the Big East heading into league play. We'll wait and see if that's the case, but they deserved a little bit of shine, and so some shine they will get after beating Purdue in the Crossroads Classic on Saturday.
It looks like there's only five teams in the country that are top 15 in both offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency right now. And one of them is Butler. The others, if you're curious, appear to be Ohio State, Duke, Louisville, Kansas, and then Butler as well. So that's nice company for the Bulldogs. 11-1, five top 55 KenPom wins. I don't know if when we look up on Selection Sunday, they will actually get a one seed or even be in the conversation to get a one seed. But if you're trying to figure out who's done the most work between the start of this season and Christmas, Butler's right at the top of the list, or certainly near the top of the list. It is super impressive stuff. All right. You ready for our Sunday podcast review?
Let's give somebody a shout. And just a reminder to our listeners, so normally we have a Wednesday episode, but Wednesday is Christmas. We're not going to record on Christmas, and we want to actually give you something in time for your commute if you happen to be traveling to see friends or family on Christmas Eve. So the plan is to record an episode on late Monday night, give you something for your commute, and we are still going to take mailbag questions. So go to the Apple Podcast review section, ask us a question. Our next episode, since there's going to be almost no games of note that are going to be played and we think the storylines will be low, we're going to take a look back at the year in 2019 in college basketball, share some of our favorite memories, interesting notes, some of the biggest stories, kind of look back, give you a College Hoops 2019 year in review, if you will. So we'd love for you to go and rate and subscribe to the podcast and Apple Podcasts if you have not already done so. And even if you have, please submit a question. And why not? Make it themed toward the year 2019. Ask whatever kind of question you'd like. But if you'd like to do that, we can certainly incorporate that into our next episode as well. Hope you're having a happy and wonderful holiday season. Thanks for taking the time to spend with us. We'll still have you covered with three podcasts later on this week. And as always, appreciate you listening.
Remember, I tell people that if you go to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball page over at Apple Podcast, you leave a review, five stars and a nice comment. I'll pick one each week, and maybe you can get shouted out like Larnell. So here we go. This one comes from Vic, and here's what Vic wrote. Vic wrote, "I've been a huge college basketball fan my entire life. Took me 23 years to find this podcast, and the rest is history. I've listened to every episode for the last 2 years, and Norlander and Parrish." Hold up, Vic. Let's flip those around. "I've listened to every episode for the last 2 years, and Parrish and Norlander are the highlights of my
life." If you want to alter what the man said on a podcast review, that's just your choice. But you might alienate future listeners from saying, why am I going to provide a review if Parrish is just going to change what I wrote? That's all I'm saying.
That's fair. Okay, I'll read as is. But going forward, new rules. If you're going to name us both, my name has to come first.
Okay, dude. I'm walking on one leg, and your name's got to come first. Sounds like a fair trade.
I'll restart from Vic. "I've been a huge college basketball fan my entire life. Took me 23 years to find this podcast, and the rest is history. I've listened to every episode for the last 2 years, and Norlander and Parrish are the highlights to my week every week. Yes, even in the off season. And these guys make any news exciting, regardless of how slow or uneventful the news circuit is. Only suggestion for y'all, be nice to us Kentucky fans. We're just a passionate people who live and die for basketball season. That's from Vic. And I will say that Kentucky fans get a reputation of being the craziest. I don't even know if they're the craziest. There's just so many of them that their percentage of crazies is higher than just in terms of volume. They have more crazies than anybody else, but I don't find them necessarily to be any crazier. Certainly passionate, but any like crazier than most. But if Vic is going to identify himself as a reasonable, passionate but reasonable Kentucky fan, then that's my kind of Kentucky fan. And obviously, here in Las Vegas, I've been surrounded by Kentucky fans. Nothing but good experiences, and they make these neutral court sites pop.
Right.
You know, like we watch some of these neutral court sites around the country. They ain't great. And I don't know what this one would look like without Kentucky. But with Kentucky, it looks full. Like Chris Holtman sat down yesterday after the win in his opening comments. He said it's a really nice kind of neutral court win because it was filled with Kentucky fans. I mean, Ohio State, I'm not saying they won in Rupp Arena, but they won what felt like a road game against the Kentucky Wildcats. And I have an immense amount of respect for that fan base. They don't only support their team. They travel like crazy to support their team. So shouts to all Kentucky fans, but especially Vic. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. and Teagle. Shouts to Larnell. Shouts to Vic. Please go subscribe to the Island College Basketball Podcast via Apple Podcasts. Rate it favorably. 5 stars, nice comments, and we will talk to you again a little later on this week. Till then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.